Thanks for joining us for this Views and Brews podcast, recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas. We hope you enjoy the show.
I'd like to begin this evening, Jazz and the Art of the Other, with a quote, as I'm wont to do for most Views and Brews. And this is from James Baldwin. He wrote, "Identity would seem to be the garment with which one covers the nakedness of the self, in which case it is best that this garment be loose, a little like the robes of the desert, through which one's nakedness can always be felt and sometimes discerned. This trust in one's nakedness is all that gives one the power to change one's robes." So here with me tonight to discuss jazz and the art of the other, rabbi and jazz historian, Neil Blumhoff, welcome.
Happy early birthday, Rebecca McEnroy.
It's my birthday.
Tomorrow.
It's true.
Check it out.
So all we're kinds gonna, of celebration.
We're going to be here till midnight counting it down, y'all.
Chloe, you're going to have to stay up for that one. Well, let's talk about the other. You know, when we entered this conversation, we were kind of on different pages, and we've come together tonight, and you're going to teach me a little bit about the other and what you have conceived in your mind. So let's talk about how we're going to talk about this.
Certainly. Let's just, you know, figure it out here, and then we'll put it out soon.
That's typically the way it rolls. So,
so as we enter, where are we? It's September. And political climate, you guys know about that, right? Really? Nobody? So I was thinking that how do we respond to each other? How do we make each other monstrous? How do we cope with all those things out there that can assail us and pinch at our souls? And I was thinking about this in the journey of how we construct our realities or our narratives. And it seems to me to be getting increasingly more difficult to be generous as we see that those who are perhaps most cynical are most richly rewarded. So this to me is a statement of resistance against those agents of that kind of rhetoric for us to consider how we in fact can be brave and courageous and think about othering as we do. And perhaps we're gonna have a few paradigms of thinking about it through music and through jazz musicians, and then perhaps it will encourage each of us to continue to our own places and have conversations about how we are complicit in othering and how we cope with others othering us. That's what I got. So
what are we going to hear? I'm just kidding. So, you know, we talk a lot about refugees. You know, it's in the political sphere, it's in the rhetoric, it's in the news a lot. Immigration in the news a lot. So you wanted to start out this evening with talking about immigration at the turn of the century. And what jazz musician were you thinking about when you were conceptualizing that?
Well, close to my heart also is the quote by Leonard Cohen, who says that we are, maybe speaking about Jews, but speaking about each of us, I think, that we are most at home in homelessness. And the fact that we don't, you know, the fact that we sort of are here, you know. Nobody? Usually people are like, fight! Usually that's what happens. But the idea that I think that all of us are sort of regarding who we are and what we are. And I was really thinking a lot about, and this came up in a class that I was teaching at the University of Texas last week, about the construction of identity through, we're going to start with Irving Berlin. Yeah, Irving Berlin. So he, an immigrant to this country, he was born in Russia, and his a given name, and we're going to hear lots of different names that were given and how they were changed and constructed to fit what people need. He was born Israel Isidore Balin, and he changed his name to much more American Irving Berlin at the time. And what I would consider him to be would be like a born-again American. You guys know what I'm talking about? All right, so the idea that anybody who comes to college here at UT and only owns burnt orange clothing, is that too close to the bone on those people? But the idea is that he comes and he actually invents a lot of sort of what American sound is. In fact, there would be a quote from Herbie Hancock, actually, who talks about him as a great American, in a positive sense, a great American songwriter, someone who has caught and immortalized in his songs what we say, what we think about, and what we believe. So you may not know him, but he's the guy, the Jewish guy, who wrote White Christmas, Easter Parade. We're very proud of him. But he also wrote God Bless America. He wrote This is the Army. So he took on all, and he actually said when he started to make it, actually, and he was talking to somebody who was talking to him about tax shelters, etc. He was reportedly said, he said, I want to pay taxes. I love this country. So think about that. The ways that, as we talk it through the day of different ways of othering, he adopted full force the myth of America and actually created the myth of America, as it said that he reached the heart of the average American who, and this is very difficult for us to think about today, who possesses the soul of the country. So he, as we talked about, was all about reinvention, and as he thought about it coming from a little small town in Russia, about survival. And as you write and think about how we maintain tradition and how we cope with our own survival as well.
And you know, to complicate that just a little bit, it made
me
think of a quote. There's a painter, Benjamin Robert Hayden. Do you know him?
I've never met him.
No? Anyone? No. No big fans of Benjamin Robert Hayden. When he said, a man's liberty is gone the moment he becomes legitimate.
Well, he had a really long, at least Irving Berlin had a really long career. And he was wont to say that the more successful you are doesn't make the song any less worthwhile. So maybe it's a little different. So he was into corn, actually. Actually, he does say, as he says, there is an element of truth in every idea that lasts long enough to be called corny. So that's Irving Berlin. So God bless him. But I want to if we're going to talk about him and we're going to introduce the musicians in just a minute, but I want to contrast Irving Berlin, who sort of comes and sort of finds his way with a great American songbook, contrasting him with tradition with a guy named Shalom Secunda, who wrote By Mir Bis Dushain, if you guys remember that one, in 1932. it was made popular by the Andrews Sisters. Is taken from a Yiddish musical called Mein Kind Leben nor Mein Losch Nicht, which means everything's going to be okay, which in 1937, maybe, I don't know, everything's going to be okay. But By Mir Bis Dushain is a very different kind of song, which sort of recreates the old world in the new, which is sort of an immigrant experience with blue skies, which is what we're going to hear in a moment, which talks about the bluebird of happiness and talks about how everything is going to be great. And the Bluebird and the Blue Skies, written in 1926, was a last-minute addition to the Rodgers and Hart musical called Betty. And it was written by Irving Berlin to celebrate the birth of his daughter. And can you imagine this happening now? I don't know if musicians can understand or think about it, but on the opening night, it actually had 24 encores. 24. At one time. 24 encores. People really liked it. And it was one of the first songs, Blue Skies, to be featured in a talkie in The Jazz Singer. It was popularized by Benny Goodman in the swing era, which we've covered here, by Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire, with a film called Blue Skies in 1946, featured in White Christmas in 1954. Our good friend Willie Nelson in 1978 repopularized it. And most recently, as far as I've seen, it was featured in the hit Hollywood movie Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay in 2008. True story. But I'd like to think about this as an immigrant experience of somebody coming and being determined that everything's going to be okay, that no matter what persecution or what problems, he is going to create himself as the quintessential positive immigrant and the quintessential American who defines and can be more American than anybody else with God and country and patriotism.
Wow. Think about that, America, for a while.
Right.
Okay, so what are we going to hear?
So we're going to hear Blue Skies, and then I want to contrast that whole thing a little bit with guys who were sort of born in the States and who coped with war and difficulty, and how many of us just kind of try to cope with, you know, the rhetoric of today and just hope it goes away? So I want to feature a song written by Jimmy Van Heusen, who was born Edward Chester Babcock. And there's a lot of stories about this guy. And his, unbelievable. And his best friend was Frank Sinatra. And he was actually with Frank Sinatra on many certain occasions. But he wrote this song called Imagination in 1940 with Johnny Burke. And they wrote songs, that wrote the lyrics that were popularized by the rock stars of the day, Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey. And, you know, you have songs like this. So this is World War II, right? And he's writing, imagination is funny, makes a cloudy day sunny, makes a bee think of honey, just as I think of you. Oh, that's beautiful. But I think it is a little bit of an escapism, a little bit. And this became a song that was rocketed to the charts during the war years of America. So how much are we willing actually to invest ourselves when there's difficulty demanding that we get involved in things? You and I sort of see the news and we're exhausted. And we see that all the difficulties out there, refugees and other things, where we are, people are crying out for our help. And yet, what are we willing to do, and how much do we put our heads in the sand to say, you know what, let somebody else deal with it? And to me, the way that the song called Imagination works is to sort of say, I can dream about something, but a dream that is not acted upon just remains just that, just a dream. So we have Irving Berlin's determination to make it and to shape America, and we have Jimmy Van Heusen and Johnny Burke's sort of saccharine lyrics to sort of say everything's going to be okay, just don't look under the rug, or just don't open that door, or just don't talk to that person. Surround yourself with people who support you and your own positive echo chamber, and everything's going to be just fine.
Facebook.
Yay! Yeah, do that. So well, that's what we're going to listen to, ideas of engagement, and I would argue disengagement. But at the same time, Jimmy Van Heusen was actually with Frank Sinatra, who you may not know, tried to commit suicide in 1953 after his breakup with Ava Gardner. And he, Jimmy Van Heusen, who positively projects out in the world this sort of swagger. And if you read any biography of his, and online, there's a Vanity Fair article that is quite descriptive of Jimmy Van Heusen and his conquests. And many people believe actually Frank Sinatra tried to be like Jimmy Van Heusen with all the things that Jimmy Van, he was a cross-country pilot. He was a bachelor till he was 56, and he was not lonely. And the idea of who he was and what he was sort of typifies to me our ways of not wanting to get involved in the real issues of the world around us.
He was not alone. I mean,
no, he was not alone.
Maybe, not
but maybe
alone.
He was
maybe
alone.
Lonely.
Right, exactly.
Poor guy. So, okay, let's introduce our musicians.
So we're going to hear these two songs, Blue Skies, and we're going to hear Imagination. We're very honored and pleased to call up our incredible musicians. On drums is Scott Laningham. On bass is Richard Michael. On saxophone is Michael Malone. On trombone is Andre Hayward. On trumpet is David Young. And on piano, Sean Giddings, everyone. Do enjoy.
Thank you.
So we featured, so we featured David Young on trumpet.
Sure did.
Andre Hayward on trombone. By the way, Andre, I don't know if people have had a chance to see your, this is a trombone, but it's also a transformer, obviously. It's going to, it's an all plastic purple trombone. Just Mardi Gras is coming up soon, so that's a... Michael Malone on saxophone. Sean Giddings on piano. Thank you. Richard Michael on bass. And Scott Lanningham on the drums. Beautiful music, gentlemen. Thank you.
Wow. As far as escape is concerned, it's not such a bad way.
Sometimes, everything in moderation.
You know, another quote by James Baldwin that I was thinking of.
Excellent.
I can't get enough tonight.
This is really actually just about James Baldwin. This evening.
Why not? We should do a show on James Baldwin. But he said, and I'm going to butcher this because I really don't know the full thing, but he said, art is a way to reveal the truths hidden by the answers. So, you know, even though there was this escapism, even though there was kind of this masking of identity, there is still this art which comes through, which allows people to feel a truth hidden by the reality of the situation.
Hopefully. I mean, I think that as we were, that was kind of
if
a nice,
art.
Nice groove, right? Hello? What? Maybe it's just you and I enjoying a nice evening. But the idea is that, you know, maybe we could feel for just a moment that our troubles were suspended. For a moment, but then perhaps after entering into that beautiful, charmed space, we feel a little bit actually more poignantly the pains that we have. So it's a double, not, you know, I'm Jewish, but double-edged sword. You know, what can I do, right? You know, it's nice, but you'll get indigestion after.
Is anything okay?
That's my favorite joke. You guys know my joke? That's my joke. So two Jewish guys eating in the restaurant and the waiter comes up and says, is anything okay? No? Yeah. It's the high holy day season, y'all. We can do it.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about, you know, people coming to America, building America, but people really dissatisfied with America as
seeing
well.
Seeing that it wasn't all paved with what it was
gold.
With the way it was supposed to be paved.
Yeah.
Right, so people would come and recognize that, you know, the dreams were not only deferred, but maybe they was a little bit of a, perhaps a bait and switch.
Mm-hmm. And they left.
Or were tried to be molded into a way and a shape that perhaps one narrative would want them to be. You're okay as long as you fit what I think you should be.
Exactly, and there is that alienation that we feel when we do give up our identities.
I think so, and I don't know about us, but how many of us had to struggle to put on pants this morning to come, you know, to work or to get up here?
You too.
Right? You know, the fact that we have to actually, you know, get out of bed and, you know, go do stuff, that's already a compromise. But I'm not going to go there. But, you know, the idea is that, you know, for those of us who want to keep a job or want to do the things that we do, how many arrows of misfortune do we take in order to sort of, you know, keep persevering in order to have, you know, another chance, right? I mean, how many of us would really like to say what we want to say to our coworkers or a congregation or whatever or community? You know, but the idea is that we sort of, you know, we try to recognize that even in our own disillusion, even in our sense of being, you know, as Eliot would say, you know, sort of put on a pin, you know, an insect on a pin. That we try to find our way. That's why we all wear funny socks on Thursday, right? We try to make our sense and statement of individualism, but at the same time, we're dying inside. Have a great evening, everybody. Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Let's get to know your rabbi, right?
but the idea, I don't wear funny socks, but here's the idea. Here's the idea. Is that we're going to feature a conversation about a man who was brilliant and in his own way was somebody who took this incredible innovative idea, this entrepreneurial idea, and actually popularized it. So we're talking about Bud Powell, we're talking about this incredible piano player named Bud Powell, who everyone, when the advent of bebop was happening with Charlie Parker, people were like, oh my goodness, this is unbelievable, but we can't recreate what Charlie Parker was doing on saxophone. And Bud Powell, if you will, popularized it and made bebop accessible to people. And he was one of the pioneers of bebop, which in itself is a music of resistance, which we've done in this space a few times, actually. But Bud Powell was considered by his contemporaries and by the world around as somebody who needed a lot of medication and needed to be sort of kept sort of supervised. But Bud Powell, perhaps the greatest genius that there was, He was involuntarily incarcerated in Creedmoor State Hospital for over a year. And I picked this next song, which we'll do in a few minutes, called Celia. It's a beautiful song, but I picked it for a particular reason, because it was recorded when he was at Creedmoor, and he was granted a day's leave. In that day, he was brought to the studio, and he made that recording, and he was brought back to Creedmoor Psychiatric Hospital for dinner. That's what happened. And in order to prepare for the session, this was sort of the negotiation that happened, in order to prepare for the session, he could practice on the hospital's piano. That's lovely, right? However, in return, they demanded that he perform a minstrel show benefit concert for the hospital. Can you imagine? So this is Bud Powell, one of the geniuses of who we are today in American music, let alone jazz. As, again, Herbie Hancock, Powell was the foundation out of which stemmed the whole edifice of modern jazz piano. And he received ECT, which is electroconvulsive therapy, alcohol, marijuana. He was on drugs for schizophrenia. His brother, Richie Powell, was killed in a car accident along with Clifford Brown. And so he ultimately left America in 1959. He left and went to Paris, and ultimately he had to come back to America, where he died in 1966 from tuberculosis, malnutrition, and alcoholism, which is getting better and better here, y'all. But the idea is that Bud Powell, who was this incredible genius who could take, you know, which I think it's one thing to have the idea, it's another thing to communicate the idea. And that Bud Powell was able to communicate that idea to all of the other musicians and to sort of say, here's what bebop is supposed to be about. Not just here I am and doing my thing, but here I am and let's be accessible. Let's collaborate. Let's figure out and let's share ideas to make bebop a legitimate music. And ultimately, he was chased out of the world. He was certainly chased out of normative society. And then he was chased out of America, and then he came back broken and a different person completely.
And in context of othering, why did you want to pick Bud Powell? Because you didn't just pick Bud Powell for this portion, but you picked him, you know, as the promo for the event. And he was the first person you said when we were talking about doing the show.
It's true. Well, to me, Bud Powell, if I don't know if you guys saw the Facebook thing where he's in his fez. And just the lengths we have to go to communicate what is burning inside of us, just the art that we have inside of us, and how do we have to compromise? What do we have to do? And Bud Powell, in his own way, a normal person would have given up. And I, all the way through to the end, he was composing and doing what he was doing. And you know, I think that the opportunity that he has to continue to make his own music is very important. And other ideas were coming to me when I was thinking about Bud Powell and othering, because he was the ultimate other. He was the guy who was like the sick person that was in the state hospital, and then he was the guy who was not quite right that you wouldn't necessarily talk to and pose with a selfie with, you know, because he was that guy. But he was one of the most brilliant people ever, and of course one of his good friends, not surprisingly, was Thelonious Monk, who had his own troubles. Right, but the fact that they had these connections and were in the world but not of the world, it was very, very important to me. So to me, it brings up an idea from Carl Jung, which I think knowing your own darkness is the best method for dealing with the darknesses of other people. And to me, that's what Bud Powell, for me, embodies. Somebody who says, yes, I'm going to be pushed around. And many of our jazz musicians, as we get to the others too, but Bud Powell, I don't think, lost his soul for what he yet was still possible to be created in, which is his music and his art.
So are we going to talk a little bit more, or are we going to hear some more tunes?
Well, let's do one more thing, because it's nice to have the band up and down.
Because we wanted to talk about someone else also
who
dealt with this type of othering, this type of outsiderness in a very different way, and that's Charles Mingus.
We'll get to Charles Mingus in a second.
Oh, we're not going to talk about him yet?
We'll get in a second,
okay.
But we're going to link him to John Coltrane. But we're going to do one more guy.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, because this was one who I was not familiar with.
Even Jay Trachtenberg is like, brr.
Is that what he said when he talked about it?
We were watching Scooby-Doo at the time.
Okay, good, yeah.
That's what happened.
But Jay Trachtenberg is like,
because
we were doing the liner notes, and he's like, you know, what's going on? And I'm like, well, I really want to do a liner note on Ahmed Abdul Malik. Anybody? He's on the watch list, obviously. But this is an amazing. This is an amazing guy, Ahmed Abdul Malik. So Bud Powell is trying to find his way being buffeted by the various forces of otherness. And in this particular case, this wonderful guy who is called, called himself Ahmed Abdul Malik, but was born Jonathan Tim. And he had this incredible myth of self-invention, just like all of us do, right? Like you're at the party, like, how did you meet? And who are you? What do you do? And you've got your 2-minute elevator speech, right? And you leave out all the other stuff, like, well, I had in-school suspension when I was a junior in high school, which completely, like, transformed my life. Like, we don't say that stuff. We say, this is what I do, this is what I do. So Ahmed Abdul Malik said he was from Somalia, but our wonderful, incredible scholar, Robin Kelly, has disproved that and said that he was not actually from Somalia. He was actually a third-generation Caribbean islander who came to America and made his way and said that he was Sudanese, and he took on this whole role, as many other musicians did, of Islam. And he adopted Islam to withstand the pressures of an individual corrosion of drugs and alcohol. So in some ways, he might be an anti-Bud Powell, where Bud Powell was sort of given these drugs, whereas Ahmed Abdul Malik sort of refrained from and found a tradition, whether it's Islam or Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism or whatever it is, that said, no, I'm going to situate myself firmly here to give myself a truth from which then I can regard the world itself.
So did he take on Islam or did he just take on the identity?
No, he definitely took on Islam.
Yeah.
And he learned to play the oud. He was a bass player. We're going to feature Richard in a second. But he played the oud, which is a Middle Eastern instrument, and he toured all over South America. He toured North Africa. He gave oud lessons, and he was very steeped, at least in the cultural understandings of at least Islamic music. And I urge you to go listen to his stuff. It was just all reissued in 2013, and it's phenomenal. And if you want to hear sort of Eastern and Western, he was a big influence on my own compositions, actually. Very, very interesting guy.
And, you know, that idea also of reinvention from the Caribbean is really interesting. You know, that was a way that a lot of people made it in the U.S. from the Caribbean, was just to completely reinvent their identity.
Like Alexander Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely
true. Thank you for that.
No, whatever. So it's absolutely true. But how do we reinvent ourselves? And even those of us who are like, wait a minute, I'm proud and I'm not. But is any of this resonating for any of us? Of how we sort of tell our own myths to get by, and how we live in such a binary system that I am who I am, and therefore you can't be who you think you are because you have to be who I think you are. And I think that that's what a lot of this is. And if we compare and contrast Bud Powell and Ahmed Abdul Malik, it's really interesting of Bud Powell sort of feeling sort of acted upon, and Malik sort of going out and saying, no, you can't do this. I'm going to take on something that I consider to be important and operate from there.
Well, I think there's a double power to that as well, because over in the Gordon White building, if any of you have been over there, there's an exhibition by Annalee Davis, who is a white Creole from Barbados. And one thing that she emphasizes, and I think that's really powerful here, is that a lot of people who came to the Caribbean were stripped of identity. And so to own their own identity and invent themselves was a way of gaining power over their lives.
100%. And it's interesting and telling that he doesn't do it from a lens of the Caribbean. He does it, with the lens of being Sudanese, which is very interesting. Right? So how many of us, and again, where does that come from? Isn't even thinking about the colonialism of the Caribbean, and that's not good enough to go back to sort of like the Ur reality of who we are, of when does that look like? Because we're all sort of imperfect, but how far back do we go? You know, and you know, one can begin to think about religion in this way too, which we have done too. But where can we have at least a toehold in which to think about our world? And I'm speaking from my own personal level too. You know, finding a place of refuge in order to realize how difficult and broken things really are.
Yeah, and to also identify, you know, what battles have shaped the identities with which we have, and how do we get outside of those battles? To create an identity outside of the empire of the Caribbean and colonialism is, you know, a very rich historical moment to take on.
Right, and taking on something other and allowing that to define who we are, I think is a leap and very important, and a mechanism for allowing us to engage, not escaping, but allowing us to steep in order to engage, which is what he did. And Malik was successful to a degree, but in the 70s, he was teaching junior high, which is great, but he was just teaching just in Brooklyn. He was just living there, as opposed to touring the world as he did in the 50s and the 60s. So he found his way, and he, with his own discipline, allowed his life to take on the meanings of teaching a new generation.
So we're going to hear a couple more tunes.
Yep.
And talk about Vegas and
take some questions as well. Cool. All right. So we're going to hear two songs. This is recorded in 1949 in a day by Bud Powell. It's called Celia. And the next that we're going to hear is African Bossa Nova, which you don't normally hear those two words, three words together. But African Bossa Nova, which is really beautiful. We're going to feature on Celia, of course, Sean Giddings on piano. And on African Bossa Nova, it's going to be a beautiful song, blowing song. We're going to hear from Scott Laningham, and he's got everyone's going to be a percussionist today. So let's welcome back our musicians as we hear and consider Bud Powell and Malik. So we have Scott Laningham on drums, Richard Michael on bass, Sean Giddings on piano, Michael Malone on saxophone, Andre Hayward on P-Bone, David Young on trumpet, Bud Powell, Ahmed Abdul Malik. Thank you.
Bye.